Chapter 10, The Daring Scheme. Well, Edie, you have laid a big egg, but I'll help you to hatch it. Emily Pogson's response to Edith Brown's outline of the scheme was one of unreserved enthusiasm. It's a fact that if we want competent girls as assistants in the medical work, we are going to have to train them ourselves. Always someone must take the lead. And I feel God is calling you to do it. We can work on these plans together, and God will bring them to a successful conclusion. The earliest pioneer in Christian medical education was the Reverend J. L. Humphrey of the American Methodist Mission. In 1858, as he traveled to his first station, he became acutely aware of the medical needs on every side. This impression never left him. And when he was forced to return to the United States in 1863 because of his wife's illness, he determined to take medical training. He enrolled at Albany, New York, and completed his medical course before returning to India in 1868. His friend, Pandit Nand Kishore Talsidar of Sambal in Moradabad district, challenged Humphrey to train some of the local Indian women in midwifery and diseases of women and children. The pundit agreed to cover all expenses which were not covered by grants and subscriptions. The civil surgeons advised against the project. They felt that the Indian women had not sufficient ability to grasp the subject, nor sufficient strength of character to enable them to practice with any degree of success. Nevertheless, Dr. Humphrey rose to the challenge, and the first class was opened on May 1, 1869, with 10 women and 6 men. The course extended from May through November. The government provided a committee of 3 to examine the candidates. The successful ones were given certificates which stated that they had been examined in anatomy, midwifery, pharmacy, practice of medicine, and the management of minor surgical cases. And we consider her qualified to practice as a midwife and also to undertake the treatment of all ordinary diseases. In 1870, 4 women and 1 man passed, and in 1871, 5 women and 3 men were successful. These classes demonstrated that it was possible for Indian women to efficiently undertake a course of medical training. The students of this group were in a sort of apprenticeship relationship, and after completion of the course, Dr. Humphrey maintained a fatherly interest in their work. Much of this work was picked up by Dr. Clara Swain, who was the first woman doctor to arrive in India under any missionary society. Dr. Swain began her first medical class on March 1, 1870, with 14 girls from the Methodist orphanage and 3 married students. The first classes were in anatomy, physiology, and materia medica. Again, the training was along the lines of apprenticeship. The girls took turns looking after the sick in the orphanage and accompanying the doctor on sick calls to the city or village in order to gain practical experience. After 2 years' training, the students were examined by 2 civil surgeons and Dr. T. S. Johnson. The 13 successful students were granted certificates of practice in all ordinary diseases. Other classes followed until Dr. Swain went home on medical furlough in 1876. Back at her station in Ludhiana, Emily Pogson brought all her powers to bear on Miss Greenfield as she sought to enlist that lady's help in the furtherance of the scheme. "You know the great difficulty we have in manning the hospital and dispensary. True, we have just had a new doctor come out from England, but she hasn't learned the language and has difficulty in communicating with the patients. It will be a long time before she can carry the medical mission into the zenana. How much more effective it would be if there were an Indian lady already trained as her assistant, one who could go into the homes, speak their language." Miss Greenfield saw the validity of the argument and agreed to host a conference at Ludhiana. Letters were sent to all the women missionaries engaged in any sort of medical work in the North Indian areas where Urdu and Hindi were the spoken languages, inviting them to a conference to be held at Ludhiana on Christmas week, 1893. The purpose of the meeting was to consider ways and means of establishing a medical education program for Christian women in North India. Edith Brown dreamed the dream, but at the same time she sought out the material facts and aid which would enable the dream to become a reality. As early as September 22, 1893, she had launched her crusade among friends overseas. Writing to the Mrs. C. and J. Culverwell of Dublin, she revealed the amount of thought and planning which had gone into preparations for the conference. "Now I want to tell you about a scheme I have in my head and am trying to work out. I wonder whether you will be interested and care to help. I know you are all so much interested in education as well as in mission work. I have laid the matter before the Baptist Zenana Missionary Society, and we are having a conference of lady doctors at Ludhiana the week before Christmas. I want to start a Christian training college for Eurasian and Indian girls, where they shall be taught by Christian ladies fully qualified and trained up to the standard of civil hospital assistance, and trained spiritually at the same time. When established, we would ask to be recognized by government, and that our students be allowed to take the government exams of Agra or Lahore. I think we would need about £400 a year to train 15 or 20 students at a time, and about £300 for initial expenses. I think about £10 per year would cover the personal expenses, food, books, and clothes for each student. Do you think you would like to take up a protege if it is started? I think if we had promise of support for a few special students before our conference, it would have weight with the committee as we lay the matter before them. At the conference, we shall draw up a plan of what we propose to do and send it to the committee of all the societies who work where Urdu is spoken. I feel it is a very great undertaking, but I do feel, too, that the thought is of God and that He will give the power to carry it out." Edith was also in contact with Miss Bertha Thorne, nominal head of the Baptist Zenana Mission Work in northern India. The scheme required the full cooperation of this particular mission society. It was therefore important that Miss Thorne not only assent to the project, but also to be present to hear the full presentation and discussion at the conference. From various points, the women came, converging on the Zenana Mission Bungalow at Ludhiana. Altogether, 14 missionaries were assembled in the large living room of the bungalow, where Rose Greenfield, the presiding officer, called the meeting to order on December 20, 1893. Sarah Secunda Hewlett from Amritsar, in a devotional period, called everyone present to greater dedication and trust in the one who could lead in all things. Pointing to the message of Colossians 2, she reminded them that God was no man's debtor and had freely provided for all their needs, being mindful of the privilege which is ours, of knowing that we are the children of God, and knowing the rich provision He had made for all our needs in Christ, in whom dwelleth all the fullness of God, and in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. The spiritual foundation had been laid. God had been solicited in prayer to guide the deliberations. Miss Brown now had the floor, and it was toward this moment that all the previous months of preparation had been directed. Many times I have felt really in despair. I have felt restricted and limited in my work. Women needing medical aid have been in the village and unable to come to me. On the other hand, I could not leave the hospital unattended and go to them. How can good and effective work be done with no trained helpers? I have thought and prayed much about it, asking for guidance as to what could be done. I have consulted with senior missionaries in various places as to the possibility of getting trained helpers, and always the answer has been that none were available, and if we wanted them, we would have to train our own. A few have been permitted to study with the men students in Agra and Lahore, but the conditions were too difficult for Christians to be willing to send their daughters. But there are educated Christian girls who would like to become doctors if it is possible under the right circumstances. There is a crying need for trained Indian women to be medical assistants, and as that training is not available anywhere, we must start it. Dr. Brown warmed up to her subject, but she realized that not everyone in front of her was in total agreement as to the need. Scanning the 13 faces, she remembered that while 7 of her listeners were trained doctors who had successfully qualified in some medical school, the other 6 were not so qualified. Nevertheless, they were carrying on an effective medical program. Surely they were thinking that what was good enough for them would be good enough for Indian assistants. She sent up a silent prayer for continued inspiration from above. A doctor alone, without nurses, dispensers, and assistants, is like a captain without a crew, or an officer without a regiment. They must have trained assistants, for in cases of life and death, an ignorant nurse, an incapable compounder, or a careless assistant will undo all the best medical skill can do for the sufferer. A school to train assistants is essential. What a strain is thrown on the young doctor just come from home with the language to learn, the peculiarities of the climate, the people, their ways, customs, and diseases to study, if she must also, step by step, painfully instruct someone in every detail for every case, and be herself head nurse, dispenser, etc., as well as taking the responsibility of the physician and surgeon. But given a training institution where some can be taught to nurse, others to compound, and the better educated still further trained for hospital assistants and assistant surgeons, the newcomer will find great possibilities at once open to her. And if these trained helpers be Christian, they will touch the people and commend the love of Jesus to them long before the foreigner has power to speak. Dr. Brown had a receptive audience as she presented the case, outlined her solution for the problem, and cogently pressed the argument. The question now is, are we to provide a good medical education under conditions which will make it possible for the best educated girls of the best Indian families to take up the work? Dr. Mary Bryan from the American Methodist Episcopal Mission at Bareilly was quick with a rebuttal. The idea of training Indian girls is not entirely new. It was first tried by Dr. J. L. Humphrey of the Methodist Mission in 1868. This same training was picked up by Dr. Clara Swain after her arrival in 1870 and carried on for some time at our hospital in Bareilly. Some of these young women are performing vital service in their villages at the present time, and their place in the program of medical missions must not be underestimated. This quick review of medical education history prompted a response from Miss Hewlett. I have been training nurses and midwives for a number of years, but in addition, I have given basic medical training to a number of girls who are serving in a variety of places and doing most of the medical work of a qualified doctor. However, they are not doctors and do not have any professional standing. I wish they were qualified and could take their places along the officially recognized medical practitioners. Therefore, we must work to that end. One by one, the women expressed their opinions. Letters for and against the project were read from those who had been unable to attend. Miss Brown reiterated the goal of the scheme. We seek to offer a 4-year curriculum of medical education which will be on a par with, if not superior to, that offered in the government medical colleges. We seek to train young ladies up to the level of hospital assistants and prepare them for the government examinations whereby they will be qualified and certified as medical practitioners and have official professional standing. Furthermore, in our ultimate goal of reaching the women of India with the gospel of Christ, each of the students will be given rigorous spiritual preparation to prepare them fully as missionaries to their own people. God is calling us to go forward, and we must respond in holy obedience. We will find that, in spite of doubt, difficulty, and discouragement, He will go before and make provisions for our needs. This final appeal, coupled with the pleas of Miss Greenfield and Miss Hewlett that the missionaries needed to be concerned not with the past or even the present performance, but with the needs of the future, brought the first portion of the conference to a conclusion. Miss Bertha Thorne offered the motion that we consider it necessary to do something to secure a thorough Christian medical education for girls in India. This resolution was unanimously approved by the Assembly. Miss Brown now found herself faced with the most difficult part of her task, to convince the women that a separate medical school was the solution to the recognized need. During the past few months, I have visited the medical schools at Agra and Lahore. I have made a thorough study of these other schools where lady students are admitted. The results of these studies has indicated the desirability of organizing a separate school for women. At present, the moral climate in the two schools is insufferable for girls. Just now, two more girls have been expelled from Lahore on moral grounds, and the record has not been good. These girls do not get competent training in midwifery from their men teachers, and etiquette forbids them asking questions. Further, they are never permitted to hold posts as clinical clerks or dressers. We must open the field of medicine fully to women by providing a thorough medical education taught by women in a woman's hospital and under Christian influence. She saw questions forming on the lips of some of the women and knew that she must answer these questions before they were asked. It is said by some that the best solution is to maintain Christian hostels for our girls in conjunction with government medical schools. But this does not work effectively, and the hostels have little influence over the students. Such boarding houses as now exist do not exercise any supervision during the day, and the influence they do exert is non-Christian. In one boarding house, though all but one student happened to be Christians, an optional Sabbath Bible class conducted by a lady medical missionary was not allowed to be continued because it was contrary to the rules of the institution. These girls are only 17 or 18 years of age and face positive dangers by their withdrawal from direct Christian instruction and from the influence of Christian home life. They are receiving instruction in the sacred mysteries of human life from teachers who do not have the Christian understanding of life. Miss Brown continued to put forth her points, one after another, with all the persuasiveness at her command, and then waited for the cross-questioning. Again, it was Dr. Bryan who had the ready response. It is true, we in the Methodist Mission have found that a boarding hostel is not the most satisfactory arrangement for the supervision of girls in medical training. We had a hostel in connection with a medical school at Agra, but because the girls were away from the home the whole day, they could not be efficiently controlled or influenced by the supervising lady, so we closed it. It has not worked satisfactorily anywhere, so we must reject it as a possibility. Now the other missionaries joined the discussion, several seeking to gain the floor at the same time. Will the cost of a separate medical school not be beyond the financial ability of a group such as ours? Wouldn't it be economically more feasible for us just to organize a well-disciplined boarding hostel? Where would we find suitable buildings and grounds for such an important institution? Where would be the best location, and under what auspices would the school be conducted? As the questions flew from left and right, Miss Brown was interested to note that often they would be answered by some other member of the group. However, she kept track of the questions in discussion, knowing that these same questions would be asked many times in the future by people in India and overseas. Miss Greenfield brought the meeting back to a point of action. Letters were read from various missionaries who, though absent, espoused the idea of establishing a Christian hostel in connection with each of the existing government medical schools. After further discussion, the group negated the idea of a boarding hostel on four grounds. 1. This type of experiment had been tried by the American Methodist Episcopal Mission and had not been successful. 2. If the boarding hostels were not under a woman doctor, the tutorial help needed by the students could not be given, while if a woman doctor was required for each hostel, as many women would be needed for this purpose as for an efficient medical school. 3. The boarding hostel scheme would not remove the drawback of the lecturers and practical anatomy being given by men. And 4. The annual expenses of so many separate establishments would almost certainly exceed those of a thoroughly equipped medical college. Now the way was open to advance the proposals for the establishment of the medical school. The previous groundwork brought good dividends as 12 separate propositions were advanced covering the purpose, program, organization, administration, staffing, and support of the school. Each proposition was thoroughly discussed and voted upon. All passed unanimously and were signed by all those present. The entire proceedings were then committed to covenant form to be printed and circulated to all missionary societies working in India to enlist their support in this new venture of faith. None of the missionaries felt that this action freed them from responsibility for the girls studying in government medical schools. Each felt a deep concern because of what she heard regarding conditions in these schools. Finally, a petition was drawn up and signed requesting the government to provide better arrangements and to make provisions for more adequate supervision of girl medical students. To execute the proposals of the conference, a provisional executive committee was organized with Edith Brown as secretary and Ida Balfour as treasurer. Later, a permanent committee would be established to form the legal entity for the school. The women were greatly excited by the thought of the radical new step they had taken, to be pioneers in formal medical education for women in the whole of India. This excitement continued after adjournment as they boarded a train for Amritsar to view the facilities available at Miss Hewlett's training school. A choice had to be made between three locations for the new medical school, Ludhiana, Amritsar, and Bareilly. Finally, the decision was cast in favor of Ludhiana. At Ludhiana was one of the oldest, if not the oldest, of Zenana missions. It was entirely undenominational, having staff members from the Church of England and various Presbyterian, Independent, and Baptist churches. Of these workers, three had long been engaged in medical work before the advent of qualified women doctors. Two were fully qualified MDs. Two others were fully qualified nurses of long experience. Of the rest, two long assisted in dispensary work. In addition, Indian nurses and compounders were available, having been trained in the hospital. There was a hospital containing 25 beds, with plans for immediate expansion. It and the adjoining dispensary were equipped with modern medical and surgical appliances. For the use of the medical school, there was a large building, formerly used as a girls' school, in which accommodation for about 30 girls could be found, and which would provide room for staff quarters. In addition, Ludhiana had long been an important center of missionary work of all kinds, with its Christian schools, printing press, Bible women, etc. From these and other facts, it was seen that there would be every advantage in the way of Christian instruction and influence upon the students, and also opportunities for direct Christian and evangelistic work. And it was for Christian women, physically and morally suited to act as missionaries, that the school would be designed. Edith Brown had had a vision of what was needed to help the women of India. Now the beginning steps had been taken, the resolutions made, the site chosen, and a commitment made in faith for the future. So the North India School of Medicine for Christian Women was born.